I have to go upstairs and record something again, so...
Quiet.
Do not...
smash anything.
And do not disturb.
Do not disturb.
Do not come into your room.
You're listening to Pandemic, a podcast from RTE News and Current Affairs on the COVID-19 crisis. I'm Colm O'Mungoyne, and each week I'll be talking to RTE's correspondents, reporters and others to bring you news, updates and analysis you can trust. We can guarantee you a high quality of information. Sound quality, on the other hand, might vary somewhat. The correspondents and I will be recording this in many cases on mobile devices from home, so please do bear with us. It's Thursday the 17th of June, and this is the 90th episode of the Pandemic Podcast. We're going to look at Afghanistan today, listener, a country where about 55% of people live in poverty, according to the World Bank. And since the US-led invasion in 2001, the security situation has been in upheaval. And now, as the US and its allies prepare to withdraw, the 20-year insurgency by the Taliban is making consistent headway. The country is also in the middle of its third wave of COVID-19, experiencing its worst surge to date, with more than 3,200 cases in the last 24 hours, according to the World Health Organization. According to the Ministry of Public Health in Afghanistan, the MOPH, you'll hear reference to that throughout the interview, 101 people died in the last 24 hours, although according to the World Health Organization, that figure is 159. That brings total deaths to over 3,800 in the country. So with all the underlying vulnerability, what has the impact of the pandemic been and how is Afghanistan coping? Well, that's what I've been asking Rohullah Sorush, a researcher with the Afghan Analysts Network in Kabul. You'll hear him refer to the MOPH, as I say, during the course of this interview. He's up next. So first of all, welcome Rohullah Sorush, and thank you for talking to the Pandemic Podcast here on RTE.
Thank you.
You have a unique perspective on this, I suppose. You're not just a researcher who looks at aspects of life in Afghanistan in depth, as well as obviously living there, but you're also a qualified medical doctor.
I'm a dentist, actually. I have studied dentistry, but general medicine as well. I have studied Kabul Medical University. Yeah.
Okay. So can you take us back to 2020 and maybe in brief talk about Afghanistan's experience of the first and second waves? What was the mood in the country like? How much concern was there to Afghanistan's exposure to the pandemic?
The first wave was really fearful. I mean, it was really risky and dangerous compared to the second wave. It was because people for the first time faced with such a disease, such a pandemic. At that time, it was completely unknown. People did not know anything about that disease. People were really afraid and concerned when they saw videos of people falling down on the roads, on the streets, dying, and people in the hospitals as well. So hospitals at that time were not ready to deal with such disease. And at that time, doctors were afraid of patients. Patients were afraid of doctors. At the private offices, doctors refused to visit patients and check patients and told them to go to a public hospital, even if they had an ordinary cold. And when someone was sneezing or coughing, people looked at them with fear. They thought that he or she might have the COVID-19, he or she might have been infected and then transferred the disease to us. What we experienced that at that time, we went to the graveyards and talked to the people who dig graves in the cemeteries, and they said that compared to the normal time, they received many dead bodies per day. There was also reports about carpenters who made a lot of coffins for the dead bodies. They were on the rise, not only in Kabul and also in Herat and other places in Nangarhar. Yeah, that was the first wave. But the second wave, during the second wave, the situation was rather normal. I think the virus infected, but it was a bit mild compared to the first one. Official figures were very low, and at that time, the highest number of the confirmed case was 290 per 24 hours. That was the highest number.
And before we move on to then to the third wave, in the first and second waves, what kind of public health measures were taken? Was it mask wearing? Did government buildings shut? Did schools close? Were there restrictions on crowds? What kind of things?
People took it a bit serious. more serious than the second and the third wave. Schools were closed at that time. Universities, other education centers were all closed. People were told to stay at home. Some government offices told the people to come every other day or half a day. They worked in two shifts. Not all the people wore masks, but compared to this, during the first wave, it was better. Even when someone died, they just two, three people went to observe the ceremonies, and that was very simple. And the people took the measures serious, and they did not hold big ceremonies for the mourning ceremonies for their relatives who died. Such things were better than now at that time.
And so what happened between the first and second waves and the third wave that made the third wave so much worse?
So during the first wave, people were a bit serious, and during the second wave, I think people stopped taking health protocols and health measures serious, although the Ministry of Public Health repeatedly asked them to observe the measures and told them that the low number of cases does not mean that the pandemic is over or the virus is gone and we are not infected anymore. People did not believe in that. People were telling each other that it is wrong, it is, this virus does not exist anymore. The second wave was cases were really low. But then when the third wave, why is worse? You know, the number of confirmed cases and dead cases are both on the rise dramatically. The official figures are higher than the second and the first wave is because of the capacity that has been developed. There are a lot of labs in the country. They have 28 labs that's dealing with the virus all over the country. Patients have severe and signs and symptoms during this disease. It might be because of the mutation, the new variant. People refugees returned from Pakistan, Iran, and people also who traveled to India, they returned. So these are the reasons behind the worsening of the third wave.
So the Delta variant from India then would be part of the problem in the third wave that you're experiencing at the moment. Would that be right?
Yes. When I talk to the health officials here, they say that they have the UK type, the Alpha one. They do not know if they have the Delta one. There is also one lab in Kabul that is able to identify and diagnose the type of the virus, the variant. But the other officials said that we also have the Indian version, the Delta type. So both Alpha types and Delta types play a key role in the third wave. These two variants seem to be spreading faster.
What is the health system in Afghanistan like? You mentioned that there's a public and a private system, which is true of an awful lot of countries. But in terms of hospital capacity, the ability to treat people in hospital, infectious diseases, wards in hospitals, what would the health infrastructure in Afghanistan be like?
Afghanistan's health system is very weak and fragile, although there have been improvement. New hospitals built, they have been equipped with ventilators, X-rays, CT scan machines, and they have oxygen producers, these things. 2 days ago, there were reports that the hospitals, especially those allocated specifically for COVID-19, were full, and they did not have the capacity to receive new patients. And they told patients to go and stay at home and quarantine themselves. There are a lot of rooms for improvement in the health system.
And daily rates at the moment, you mentioned the rates had been quite low in the first and second waves. But daily rates now are in excess of 1,800 daily cases?
Yeah. It has been increasing dramatically, and there has been a sharp increase. I mean, today, for example, I just received the message from the Ministry of Public Health that there are 2,313 new confirmed cases and 101 dead cases. So if you compare it to the first wave, I mean the dead cases, it's six times higher than the first and second wave. The number of confirmed cases is also very high.
How has the vaccine rollout been going? Because in the paper you wrote for the Afghan Analysts Network, the vaccine uptake, you said, had initially been quite difficult or had been going quite slowly, but the increase in visible cases and the increase in deaths has actually encouraged people, would that be right to say, to go and get vaccinated?
Yeah, that's true. For one thing, we do not have enough doses of vaccine. So for a country with a population of almost 40 million, a very huge percentage of population would need vaccination. And then we received around 1 million doses from the COVAX. That was the AstraZeneca vaccine. And recently, I think 2-3 days ago, we received like 700,000 doses from China, which is not enough. At first, it was going very slowly. And in some areas, people would not welcome it. They were really reluctant to go and get vaccination, because they didn't know anything about it, and there were rumors about this. Besides that, people who actually received vaccination, they had mild side effect. They had like fever, and they had headache and so on. Other people heard about this. They said that it's better not to get vaccination if you have such problems like headache and fever. But then the MOPH, Ministry of Public Health, had public awareness campaigns, not only in Kabul, but also in other areas, through their health departments, by the ulemas, the religious scholars, and also the local councils. When people saw the number of confirmed cases, there were a lot of deaths, they started to come. And then gradually, vaccination was good. And some areas, people, they still need to be told about the importance and the impact it has to prevent them from getting infected.
Okay, so if you could just give me it maybe in numbers again, the population of Afghanistan is what, and you have received how many doses so far?
There is not a very reliable number about the exact number of population in Afghanistan, but it is said it's almost 40 million. And then the doses of vaccination we received, that was around 1 million doses from India, that was the AstraZeneca. And then 700,000 doses from China.
Only a very, very small fraction of the population has been able to be vaccinated. How has the security situation in Afghanistan affected the response in terms of rolling out of public health measures, getting out the public health message, treating sick people, supplying necessary supplies to hospitals, oxygen and medications and equipment and those kind of things? What is the effect of the security situation been in Afghanistan?
You know, security situation is very complicated. The government has lost 25 districts all around the country, and in the big cities, every day, almost every day, there is an explosion, sometimes 2-3 explosions, that has a very bad impact on the response to the pandemic and also vaccination. In terms of vaccination, you know that, for example, I can tell about Maidan Wardak province. The provincial health director told me that only the center of Maidan and two districts of Behsud, which are the Hazara-dominated areas, they were able to apply the vaccination, implement vaccination there. When in other areas, they were not able to implement that because of insecurity and fighting going on. And in Ghazni also, the provincial health director told me that in most of the districts where insecurity is going on Taliban control a lot of areas, they were not able to send their mobile vaccinators in those areas. In Paktia and Logar, the same thing happened, and actually Taliban prevented from the vaccination. So insecurity, I can say, impacted the response very badly.
And what has the Taliban's attitude been to vaccines? Are they against the vaccine, or do they just not allow government public health workers to operate in their areas? Or have they reached a point where they see people who are sick and want to let the vaccines in, or does it differ in different areas?
There was reported in a report, they quoted the spokesperson for the Taliban group, that they were interested in a vaccination campaign, but they wanted their health commission to be consulted on the issue. It is one thing, but practically in some areas, actually Taliban prevented the vaccination process. They prevented from hiring the vaccinators. In Baghlan, for example, they prevented from hiring the vaccinators, as the provincial health director told me. Then they managed to talk to the Taliban through the local council and the elders, and that helped. But then the Taliban again insisted on consulting with them, consulting with their health commission, so that they could let vaccinators go to the area and implement vaccination. And Paktiap, we talked to the provincial health director. Only people could get vaccination in the center of the province. In the districts, completely it was banned. It was prevented by the Taliban.
And you mentioned their community and religious leaders. Have they been willing to help health authorities to get the message out and encourage vaccination?
Yes, yes. I think the community leaders, religious leaders, they have been able to help. First in Kabul, when the government asked them to, in the mosque, talk to the people, direct them, instruct them, and to take the public health measures, not to hold public gatherings, large gatherings like the mourning ceremonies and wedding parties and so on. To some extent, that helped, although all the people do not observe that. I know some ignore that. For example, yesterday there was a very big mourning ceremony for someone who was killed recently in an explosion in west of Kabul. I asked a person who actually attended that ceremony, and I asked if it was crowded. He said it was really crowded. People also did not wear masks. For example, out of 10 or people, one might have worn the face mask. Generally, that was helpful in others tried to observe that, others tried to listen to the religious scholars and take the health measures to stop attending mourning ceremonies or holding such big gatherings for the person who has died. And in terms of vaccination, yeah, in some areas, in some provinces, they actually talked to the people and told them to go and receive vaccination.
Finally then, is the situation improving, or are you still very much in the middle of the third wave?
Well, according to the situation I see now, these days, we are still not in the peak of the third wave. According to the health officials, the number of confirmed cases are still on the rise. Today, we had 2,313 confirmed cases. That might increase as well. There might be a surge in the number of confirmed and dead cases.
Okay, Rahul Asarush, thank you very much for talking to me.
Most welcome, sir. Most welcome.
And that's it for another episode. You can listen back to previous podcasts at www.rte.ie/news/pandemic. If you can spare the time, please do leave a review of this episode or others on your podcast platform of choice. If you'd like to get in touch with me, drop a line to colm.omongain@rte.ie. That's colm.omongain@rte.ie. Or indeed contact me on Twitter @colm.omongain. Until next week, take care, stay safe, and thanks for listening.